Picture this. You're climbing through 4,000 feet just north of a Class Charlie airport. You've switched to departure frequency. You check in, give your call sign, your altitude, your destination. Nothing comes back. You try again. Maybe you're stepping on someone. You wait, try a third time. Dead air. You cycle back to the previous frequency. Nothing. You reach for the backup radio. Still nothing. Your mode C is encoding. Your transponder is on and working, but no one is talking to you, and you're flying through controlled airspace with no communications. What do you do? I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. And if you hesitated on that answer, that's okay. That's exactly why we're here today. The lost communication scenario is one of the most disorienting things that can happen in the cockpit, and the procedure lives inside a regulation that most pilots study for the written test and then file away and never think about again until they need it. So let's make sure that doesn't happen to you. Quick word to our friends at aviationsoul.com before we dive in. They make challenge coins for every milestone in the pilot journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial. Real coins built for the moments that matter. If you know a pilot who just earned something worth celebrating, or if you want to mark your own progress, check them out. aviationsoul.com. All right, lost communications. The first thing I want you to understand is what happens in the cockpit in the first 60 seconds after comms go out. Because that first minute is where pilots make mistakes, not because they don't know the procedure, but because the instinct to fix the radio takes over. You start cycling frequencies, you check connections, you pull out the handheld, you're debugging, and while you're bent over the panel, the airplane is still flying. Whatever is outside the windshield is still changing. Weather, traffic, terrain. The discipline you need to drill into your bones is this. Fly the airplane first. Diagnose second. Every time. Say it out loud in the cockpit if you have to. I'm flying the airplane. Then work the problem. Now, the first deliberate action in the lost comm sequence is the squawk. 7600. That's the discrete transponder code that tells the air traffic control system exactly what has happened. When a controller sees 7600 on their scope, they don't assume you're an intruder, they don't send an intercept, they know your radio is out, and they start coordinating around you. Other traffic gets rerouted, your position gets tracked, the system starts working to protect you even though you can't hear it doing so. 7600. That goes in before you do anything else. Now the procedure splits based on whether you're flying visual flight rules or instrument flight rules, and the rules are genuinely different. Let's start with VFR. Because that's where most of you listening today are flying. If you lose communications while flying VFR, the rule from Federal Aviation Regulation 91.185 is essentially this: remain VFR and land at the nearest suitable airport. That phrase, nearest suitable, matters. It doesn't mean the nearest airport on the chart. It means the nearest airport that makes sense for your airplane, your situation, and the conditions. If weather is closing in from the west and the nearest airport is to the west, that might not be your best option. If the nearest airport has a 4,000-foot runway and you're flying something that needs more room, keep looking. Use your judgment. The regulation gives you that latitude. Now, if you're in VFR conditions and you need to transit controlled airspace to reach that suitable airport, you can still do it. Squawk 7600, fly your best route and watch for light gun signals from any tower you need to land at. Light gun signals are worth knowing cold, not just for the written exam. If you're landing at a towered airport without a working radio, those colored lights from the tower cab are your air traffic controller. A steady green means cleared to land. That's the one you're hoping to see on final. A flashing green means cleared to approach, but not yet cleared to land. You're in the traffic pattern. You're welcome. But hold off on touching down until you get the steady green. A steady red means stop if you're on the ground, or give way if you're in the air. Don't land yet. A flashing red means the airport is unsafe. Go somewhere else. A flashing white means return to starting point on the airport. Usually means you've taxied into the wrong area, or you're being sent back to the ramp. Alternating red and green means exercise extreme caution. Something unusual is going on. Here's the piece most pilots don't know. After you receive and understand a light signal, you need to acknowledge it. Rock your wings in flight, flash your landing light or taxi light on the ground. ATC is watching for that acknowledgement because it's how they know the message got through. If you land without acknowledging, they're not sure you ever saw the signals. Okay, VFR lost comms is manageable. Squawk, stay visual, land, sort it out on the ground. The scenario gets more complex in instrument flight rules. If you're on an instrument flight rules clearance and you lose communications while in instrument meteorological conditions, the situation is fundamentally different. You're inside a controlled system. You have a clearance. ATC has built traffic flow around where they expect you to be. If you deviate from that plan without talking to anyone, the whole picture breaks down. This is where FAR 91.185 does some real work, and where the regulation has enough complexity that you need a framework to keep it straight. There are three things to manage: your route, your altitude, and your timing. Let's take them in order. Route first. When you've lost comms on an IFR flight, you fly in this priority order. First, the route ATC last assigned you. If you were told to fly direct to a fix, fly direct to that fix. Second, if you were on a radar vector and there's no specific fix to navigate to, fly in the direction the vector was taking you, toward the fix or route you were being vectored toward. Third, the route ATC advised you to expect. If your clearance said to expect a specific routing after a certain fix, fly that. And fourth, if none of those apply, fly your filed route. The simple version. If you know where ATC was sending you, keep going there. The last thing they told you to do is the most current valid instruction you have, now altitude. This is where pilots get tangled up, so I want to walk through it carefully. The rule says you fly the highest of three values. First, the last altitude ATC assigned you. Second, the minimum unroute altitude for the segment of the route you're currently flying. Third, any altitude ATC advised you to expect. Here's why that third one matters. A lot of clearances include language like expect 8,010 minutes after departure. That expectation is in there for exactly this scenario. If comms fail and you never actually got the climb, you use the expected altitude to get yourself to a safe altitude. It's the system giving you information in advance precisely because this kind of failure can happen. So, fly the highest of last assigned, minimum unroute altitude, expected altitude, whichever of those three is highest. That's where you're going. A lot of CFIs teach this with the mnemonic AVE assigned, VMC minimum expected. The letters get you to the three altitudes, and the rule is always the highest. Now timing. This is the piece that shows up on instrument oral exams and sometimes gets underexplained. When you reach your clearance limit, which is usually your destination or a holding fix near it, you depart at the expect further clearance time if one was given. If no expect further clearance time was given, you depart at your filed estimated time of arrival. That timing gets you into the approach sequence at a predictable moment so ATC, who is watching your transponder, can sequence other traffic accordingly. The approach itself, you fly the approach at the EFC time or ETA. You descend, you execute the approach, you land. By that point, you've been squawking 7600 the whole time, and the controllers at your destination are expecting you. Let me build this into a scenario so the pieces connect. You depart instrument flight rules from a Class Charlie airport. Your clearance is maintain 4,000, expect 8,010 minutes after departure, then fly filed route direct to your destination. You check in with departure. 4 minutes after wheels up, comms go completely dead. You squawk 7600 immediately. For altitude, you were assigned 4,000. The MEA on your route is 6,000 ATC, expected you at 8,000 after 10 minutes. 8,000 is the highest. You climbed 8,000. For route, you were told to fly your filed route direct to your destination. That's what you do. For timing, when you reach your destination fix, you depart at your ETA and fly the approach. The scenario is manageable because the regulation anticipated it. Everything about how IFR clearances are structured assumes that this can happen. The system is designed to work even when the radio doesn't. Now let's talk about prevention, because that matters as much as the procedure. The most common cause of what feels like total comms failure isn't a broken radio, it's a stuck push-to-talk button. Your radio receives fine, but every time you try to transmit, you're keying a carrier over the frequency. Other pilots hear static. ATC hears nothing useful, and you're sitting there confused about why no one is responding. A good pre-flight check includes verifying that you can both transmit and receive. Get a readback from ground control or clearance delivery before you ever start the engine. If someone talks back to you, your radio is working. Don't skip that step. Loose headset connectors are the second most common culprit. A headset that seems seated can develop an intermittent connection as the airplane vibrates. Carry a spare and know how to plug directly into the aircraft intercom without the headset, if you have to. A handheld transceiver is one of the best $50 investments a student pilot can make. It's not going to replace your panel radio. It won't have the same transmit power or antenna quality. But when you're on the ground at an unfamiliar airport after a divert, it gets you talking to someone. Some pilots also keep the phone number for the controlling facility in their phone. Not a substitute for radio procedures, but useful once you're safely on the ground and need to close your flight plan or explain what happened. I want to come back to the mental game for a minute because this is a scenario-based segment and the mindset piece is real. There's a pattern in accident reports involving communications failures where the pilot fixates. They want the radio to work. They keep cycling frequencies long after they've exhausted the useful troubleshooting steps. And while they're doing that, the airplane is flying itself. Altitude drifts, heading wanders. Traffic gets closer. And what started as a manageable radio failure compounds into something worse because the pilot stopped flying. The call out that brings you back is simple. Aviate, navigate, communicate. In that order, every time. The radio is third on that list, not first. Your most important job is keeping the airplane right side up and pointed somewhere safe. Everything else is secondary. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was working on my instrument rating. The lost comms procedure sounds complicated when you read the regulation. 700 words of federal language about routes and altitudes and clearance limits. But when you attach it to a specific scenario, your home airport, your typical route, your standard departure clearance, it becomes almost obvious. The regulation was written to tell you to keep doing what you were already doing at the safest altitude you can justify until you get to where you are going. It's not trying to trick you, it's trying to give you a procedure that works when you can't ask anyone for help. For those of you working toward your instrument rating, FAR 91.185 is a task on the Airman Certification Standards. Your evaluator wants to see the squawk. They want to see the route logic and the altitude logic. But what they're really watching for is whether you keep flying the airplane while you manage the situation. They've seen students who know the regulation cold but freeze in the scenario. Knowing the answer is necessary, executing it while also flying is what the certificate is actually about. For those of you still building hours on a private certificate, the VFR side of this is simpler, but the principle is identical. Squawk 7600. Stay visual. Land at the nearest suitable airport. Know your light gun signals. Acknowledge what you receive. Here's the short version you can put in your mental checklist and keep there. Lost comms. Squawk 7600 first. Fly the airplane. If VFR, stay visual and land. If IFR, fly last assigned route, climb to highest of assigned, MEA, or expected altitude. Fly the approach at your EFC time or ETA. Watch for light gun signals at any towered airport. Acknowledge every signal, squawk, fly, land, every time. The regulation is FAR 91.185, and the instrument flying handbook from the FAA has a solid chapter on it with worked examples. Worth reading before your next IFR flight, even if you've read it before. This is Traffic Pattern. Find us at RadioHangar.com. I'm Pattern, and I'll see you next time.